context, Caroline Casey, and that intro, Oya Day, that we have been hearing for 24 years this month, is sung by Amakayla Gaston, with whom I will be doing an Equinox Eve Council audio by web or phone, September 21st, 6 p.m. West Coast, 9 p.m. East Coast. So Amakayla, you know, is the drummer songstress for Invoking the Orishas, the Living Intelligences of Nature. We've cahooted since the early 90s, right? So we know beauty and cruelty neck and neck. We're betting on beauty. We're voting for beauty. You know, and metaphors and music are the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world. There we go. Okay, woof, woof, woof. We hope that's working. We say, may the equinoctial winds of democracy sweep away all delusion. Oya hurls her horsetail whip. So that you can find out about at coyotenetworknews.com for reservations, tickets, and so on. So, a brief weaving of context for our fantastic guest, Max Dashew, in a moment. So, the Gettysburg Address is humming over this election. Let me briefly explain. I've been doing all this political chart detective work. So, Mercury stations direct on election day. On the very degree of Max Dashew's rising sign, so the fate of the nation rests on her shoulders. No, just kidding, but we'll play with it. Just as Mercury stationed in 2000, perhaps we will get the results from the 2000 election this year. So let us be prepared to dissolve the thuggery that shut down vote counting then, you know, with beauty and anthems and power and all of that, and the radical verses of America the Beautiful, which is very trippy, includes the lines, till selfish gain no longer stain the banner of the free. And we go, that's great. So Mercury will emerge from its retrograde shadow, because there's no one election chart, on November 19th. And I go, oh, November 19th. November 19th, 1863 is the day Lincoln, who is also presiding over this election, delivered the Gettysburg Address, a crafted, dedicated mere 2 minutes whose vitality is humming directly to us now, that we highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God or the divine, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from this earth. And of the wolves, by the wolves, and for the wolves, and all the flora, fauna, absolutely. So, witches and wizards for democracy, we say tongue-in-cheek, but also for real, we welcome brilliant scholar, ally of women's magic, Max Dashew, that we may invite all metabolizers of poison, composters of corruption, to preside over this cuckoo time, as we all brew today new moon equinoctial medicine. Her website is suppressedhistories.net. It is an invaluable contribution. Max has been keeping these powerful, sacred images alive for decades, and they're all humming and eager to be invited. So welcome, Max.
Thank you, Caroline. Yes, transformation, so, transmutation indeed. Big, big assignment we have before us.
We do. And the challenge is the Dementors feed on strife and polarity. So I loved our backstage going, let us bring these anthems like in Belarus, these powerful, or in South Africa, these powerful rousing songs. And we both thought, America the Beautiful is pretty good, written by a gay woman, you know, recovering from depression, inspired by Pike's Peak. And it does have that great line, that we want to honor. So, yes, is that a good image for that you like to see people now and in the streets and on the way to voting? And is that...
Well, that's what I was saying to you. You know, there need to be... I somehow envision that there have to be gatherings where we manifest the nature of love in what it is we're about, in trying to overturn tyranny. And yet there are all these people who have been conditioned to see that as tyranny. You know, everything's scrambled. There's so much confusion. I mean, the Dementor meme of just completely throwing people's consciousness into wackitude, so that up is down, and you know, schemes of pedophiles are actually being saved by pedophiles. You know, it's just like crazy, crazy stuff. And so it's just like, how do we bring together a unified field of spiritual intention that's visible? And that's why I thought about the anthem of the people walking through the streets singing together this beloved song in Belarus. You know, and we can see this. I mean, that was done in Soweto in the anti-apartheid movement. Yes. And you had people dancing the toy toy and singing these beauteous songs that come out of the various Nguni traditions of South Africa. You know, and so we're having to somehow co-create a way of doing that that brings visibility to the love nature of social justice. You know, because this demonization of social justice has been one of the scripts that the Dementors are playing now in order to colonize this election, right, is to make people afraid, make people angry, and really animate all these scripts of genocidal and misogynist fury. And no, you know, it's just like the transmutation, the serpent wisdom somehow has to be invoked so that we can get it to be visible that there's a principle that the medieval Spanish had. I mean, here you have, there's Muslims, there's Christians, there's still traces of the pagan traditions, but before the reconquest of Spain, I mean, you had the Moorish invasions and all these things happen, but there was this concept that arose because people did live together peacefully in that time period to a greater degree than we know now, and they talked about something called convivencia, which means the ability of different cultures to live together. You know, and this is what is really presenting itself in the United States, because there's this all these scripts of cultural combat and of hostility and confrontation that are being floated in order to actually bring about tyranny, just to use people's emotional reactions. And so we have to find a way to overcome that. And so whether it's the unity of people appearing in the streets together at socially, you know, not socially distanced, but socially unified, but physically distanced in ways that are needed for this time. And we have so many forces acting on us now. Find ways to manifest our unity. You know, and a prayer for an intention, a desire, a stated desire for there to be convivencia, unity, the respect for all lives, you know, and Black Lives Matter is right up there at the front of this, because, of course, we've had the negation. All lives matter as a way to deflect from the imperative, the emergency of Black people all this time, but certainly now in the United States. We all saw it on video cam multiple times, you know, and so we cannot allow everyone to be split off from each other, you know, that the fear will cause again this racialized division. I was very encouraged to see how Wisconsin, in the wake of Kenosha and all the ways that was the attempts to manipulate that in Dementor directions, that some of the polls are coming out and people are not being manipulated in that way. You know, they are turning against those scripts. May it be so.
And I think that, you know, all of our mentors, and I'm definitely dusting off Dion Fortune's handbook for how the ritualists in England were engaged to protect Britain from the Nazi invasion, because it's kind of like that. I keep saying, and I just for the fun of it, she starts by saying, you know, maintaining an atmosphere of serenity in our homes and world headquarters was essential, even as the bombs were dropping.
Yeah.
Otherwise, how could we have hoped to be a nucleus of stability for the nation's soul? And I go, yeah, you know, we're sloughing off the Inquisition in so many ways. You know, the sneaky Inquisition and the polarity and all, and you know, and everyone's kind of intrinsic animism, and anything for which we have a word, we have a relationship. So I love the nation's soul. And then, as she stressed, We weren't against, we weren't harming, we were protecting, we were animating angelic patrols to make sure, you know, and I think this is a good way to go, and you have such a repertoire of mythic allies. They were animating angelic patrols to protect, right, and to fend off submarines, and very completely interesting and effective we're going for, and I'm going to be starting that up in a different venue in October. But so what are some metaphoric beings that you would like to invite in that are metabolizers of poison and composters of corruption for the liberation of all beings? Do you have some favorite favorite metabolizers of poison you want to invite in now?
There are many. I just want to reaffirm what you just said about the need for there to be a stable through line of energy. People can get knocked off their balance so easily, and that's part of how turbulent and scary it is, you know, for a lot of people with all these energies that are going on, you know. So I just want to affirm that, because I feel like in my life I'm trying to just sustain that peaceful consciousness. There's a term in Hindu, samatva, which means even-mindedness, you know, and not getting caught in aversion, not getting caught in convulsive reactivity, but really keeping that steady, peaceful mind as the foundation for everything. Because, you know, this whipping storm-like quality is very, very much, you know, collectively out there in the mix. But the archetypes, the primal essences, I've been thinking a lot about the serpent wisdom. And there are a lot of deities, serpent deities, you know, the God is holding the snakes in both hands that we see, not just in Cree, which most people think of, but also in the Huastec, the Huichol culture, and the Yoruba have it on some of the Galede masks. And, you know, this is an archetype that we see in ancient Iran over and over again, East Iran, West Iran. The idea that we are working these primeval energies. I mean, first just to talk about the serpent, you know, as the ancestral, the primal waters, the forces of progeneration, the creative impulses, and yet still also transformation, healing, rebirth. You know, this is part of what we have to work with now in order to, it's almost like an Aikido move. You know, you have these forces that want to whack you off your axis, and you have to kind of glide around it. And you know, you've talked yourself about the moving in a spiral motion as a way to not get pulled off balance, but to actually move the energy to guide it in ways that serve, right, instead of ways that harm us, because it can be very, very damaging, you know, to get all caught up in these emotional storms. You know, the cortisol bath, I think we're all living to some degree in a cortisol bath.
Yeah, and just because we get to put some Virgo standards of discernment for us all, you know, to as the huge and it starts to sort it, because you know we can spiral wherever we want to go, but we were noting standards of discernment about, you know, some of the whackdoodle theories and whatever the, you know, and so there have been people discerning and going, you know, and these once worthy contributors to healthcare like Christian Northrop have gone completely crazy, and we go, yeah, that seems to be true. But then you can, in the feed, you can see it starts to get a little polarity inquisitional. And this person, too, and this person, too. And in one of the feeds, somebody said, I will never forgive them. And I go, good grief, you know, redemption for everybody. No. And it's like, no, we don't want to become the thing that we're, you know, Ursula Gwynne, we strengthen whatever we resist, or we become whatever we don't wear. Anyway, so, yes, all of that. Really cool, and especially now, right, in our chart and in the world and in California, there is but one planet in water. It's Neptune, dreams and vision. It is opposite the new moon right now. Linguistic precision guides the vision, but cooling out the conflagration, honoring the grief artfully, and wafting a cooling mist of altruism and collective embrace, you know, and dedicating, you know, we're all aspiring in this together to be agents of cool response in a hot reactive world.
And Neptune's in its own sign too. So, you know, potential is very much it's there.
Right, and it's got a very creative relationship to all the 800,000 planets in Capricorn, meaning metaphors are eager to incarnate, you know, and the power of story and metaphor always really important, and strategic cultural advantage goes to those cultivating intimacy with the power of story and metaphor, like yourself, and in a very bad way, Steve Bannon, right? I was just noticing his Venus at 19 Scorpio. I'm like, oh no, because that's the spicy sorceress degree, but he's up to no good. Okay. But again, you know, to suck the chi out of the up to no good, and for those of us not in immediate, like our house has, I mean, I know people's houses, ashes, and the grief from Oregon down California of the loss of intimacy with place is enormous and does want to be artfully expressed and rise from the ashes as kinship and as love for the earth and you know, woofiness in these ways. So for those in extremely hot circumstance, we want to send cool mist, and when we're not in a hot reactive realm, we can waft, as Dion Fortune says, the purpose of ritual magic is to spiral expanded wisdom, tolerance, and we'll add things, coolness, into group mind.
Yeah, you know, the thing about the fires, and I grieve the forest. I mean, there's one element of, and I think we have to be able to deal with our emotional response to things. Sometimes the old mysteries of lamentation are really powerful. Nice. Because there's an alchemy that has to take place, and the metaphor that I've been thinking about today is, because I'm looking at the serpent wisdom very deeply here. How do we transform? There's the story in India about churning the ocean, and they use a great serpent to turn the mountain, using the mountain as a pivot, and this is a creative act out of which come both nectar, and that's the divine immortality and wisdom, and also poison. You know, there's this splitting off that happens in this churning, this breaking down of the constituents. And Shiva does a sacrificial act because he swallows the poison, and he doesn't let it into his body. He holds it in his throat, and it turns his throat blue. And so he's called Nilakanta. There's this act of heroic using his own life essence to transform the poison so that it doesn't harm everyone else. But I think that the churning of the ocean metaphor can be used on a personal level for individual hardships and emotional storms that we go through as life, you know, we go through all these experiences, many of them painful, but also collectively, because this thing is happening on a collective level. And so, you know, what can that story teach us about the transformation that needs to take place, you know, of dealing with these painful things? We can't brush them under the rug. We have to metabolize them somehow. And, you know, that's been your great insight, the idea of nigredo in alchemy. I remember you talking about this years ago, you know, this process of this breakdown. They call it the black work. That in the alchemical process, before you get to the philosopher's stone, there are all these transmutations that have to happen at the most submolecular level of consciousness. And so this breaking down and finally this composting of energies into the ultimate, it's the release of that which has been traumatized, the pain, the trappedness, the trickster fooled by, you know, manipulators, that this can all be released down into what the Taoists call, what is your original face before birth? You know, how do we break down these formed elements that are meant by those who have thrown them out there to manipulate and control and profit and you know, this domination energies? How can we vitiate how can we redirect and actually break down those curses into original essence so that they lose their power to do harm. That's why that metaphor really speaks to me.
Well, there is a giant cauldron. The many very real metaphors that preside over this time and this election, and we're always voting for reality and all of that. But the Negredo, yes, that's right. So yeah, so as long as I can remember, you know, the Negredo, and even in our mind's eye now, we can do a little microdose because what it is, as Max said, the alchemist is holding the cauldron and it begins to seethe violently, and vapors of cruelty and moral ambiguity begin to, waft out into the world, and it's terrifying in its polarity. And the all of us alchemists might drop the vessel, but that would be a great shame because it took a very long time to get here. So what they need to do is they raise up their hand or their paw, right, and invite in whatever everybody customized, you know, oh spirit of woof that animates the universe, oh liberating trickster, oh Holy Ghost, whatever, invite in the crucial thing into the cauldron, and then it goes, and it calms down and becomes liquid gold, and then we can have a wise culture of humbly cooperating with nature, right? So there's the thing. And so it is an initiatory time, you know, and this is the time of the Eleusinian mysteries right around the equinox, which is when definitely tripping on mushrooms and ergot brew, yum, yum, and dancing all night. But then everyone saw Persephone having gone down a maiden, returning a full-powered, initiated, self-possessed queen. And it is that time now, you know, for pu'ers, for boys to go down and scrub off everything between them and their ingenious wizardry, and for girls, no matter puella, no matter what our chronological age, just to go down into that and go scrub that off, scrub that off, scrub off any Inquisition attractors as well, right, to emerge. And then the country itself, right, is getting cooked, and all of our wishes and images and prayers that this country, this culture, that human culture globally emerge with altruism, with Neptune. We're all in this thing together. How do we all beings, how do we ingeniously craft the forms that will support life? So, yeah.
Go ahead.
I hand it to you.
Yeah, I just wanted to toss something you raised there, because I just discovered this recently, the Sicilian form of Persephone is called Proserpina.
Yes,
and it is from serpare, to crawl forward, to crawl and pro forward. So it's a serpentine energy for Proserpina or for Persephone, because she is, it's very similar to the descent of Inanna. You know, it's an underworld plunge, you come out transmuted. But the renewal is the point of the story. You know, it's ultimately the pain, once you go through this transformative experience, the nectar is regenerated, and so the pain is left behind, because you've come forth in a new form, you've regenerated. And in Chinese Nedan, the Chinese alchemy, the cauldron and the fire are in us. They are our body. They are our body-mind. The whole process of firing and all these transformations happens in the body, in the self. So there's not even, a lot of the sages would warn people, it's not really about what you do with chemicals in, you know, some kind of retort somewhere in a lab. It is happening internally. Don't be fooled. You know, and as you're saying, there's a level on which this is also happening for us all collectively. You know, at this very, very charged, fraught moment, this next, I don't even know how many weeks is it now, 5 weeks? 6 weeks?
Yes, right.
Before,
well,
you know,
it's November 3rd. It's a million years of story curve and about 2 seconds. And then there's, I like November 3rd. I'm Then we have Mars going direct on Friday the 13th. I think that's of November. I think that's very witty of Mars to be going forward. Mars is on a vision quest. I mean, a lot of astrologers are like, oh, Mars retrograde. Oh, and it's like, no, planets retrograde. I like to think apparent motion backwards. They're returning to their originating purpose, the kinship with animals, the protectors, the strong enough to be gentle, the wizards within us all, regardless of extremely temporary gender assignment, the wizard who are calm weavers. So Mars does go direct on Friday the 13th, which is witty, right? Think of it as sacred to Venus.
Friday the 13th of what month?
November.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So there's that, and I looked at that chart going, I don't think that's the end of the election, but I really was heartened. I liked November 19th, you know, just as a something. It's Mercury emerging from its shadow, it's Abraham Lincoln coming in, it's the Gettysburg Address, it's Biden's solar return, Venus will be on Kamala Harris's sun. Not that it means any specific but it's available to work with. And then there's the inauguration, in which we are electing a story and electing mutual aid, unless we let it be kidnapped by the Dementors of Doom. And Pluto will be overhead at the election. We go, you know, somebody's got to get that nuclear suitcase out of the little boy's hands before that inauguration moment. And then we remember that inauguration comes from the augur, the diviner within us, who would read nature's patterns by which she would proclaim the human most dedicated to collective well-being. And then they would be inaugurated. What? I'm sorry?
I want to come back to that, but before we get too far away from Mars retrograde, I just want to mention that there's a congruence also, because now, I don't know where it is now, but at the end of the Obama administration, Mars, the progressed Mars on the U.S. chart, was retrograde. So what we're going through now is actually sort of in energetic resonance with the fact that there's a whole re-examination of the Mars of the United States. And, you know, so much of these rages that we've been seeing, I mean, that's the shadow side of Mars, you know, and there's also this huge outpouring of activist love, which is the positive side. People are taking action, you know, they're walking in the streets. And so, you know, I just want to throw that into the mix, because that retrograde, you know, Mars in the U.S. chart, progressed Mars retrograding, you know, is a reexamination. There's an opportunity there, and I think we're going through it, you know, to look at all of this in a new way, and for the stories that were suppressed that many people didn't know about, in terms of, you know, forced sterilization, which we saw in the news recently, and all these things, you know, we can look at that and say, you know, we have to transform this, because, you know, this has been a painful reality for many people. But that was just an interjection. I wanted, what you said about the augur, I want to come back to, because one of the things that, you know, in thinking about this moment we're in, and I'm thinking a lot about snake wisdom, because I'm going to be doing the snake woman visual live cast next week. I really felt like that's a subject. It's like, how do we transform? You know, that transformative wisdom, how do we do it? What is the energetic process we have to go through? And so in thinking about that, one of the things that comes up is the oracular power, you know, and you're talking about the augurs. That's part of it, right? You know, and the Etruscans were very big on watching the flight of birds, and also augury from lightning. They had this whole thing. But the oracular is really what to do. You're consulting divine wisdom, you know, some deep source, and many cultures have formal ways of doing that. So in Malawi, the pool of Malawi was a serpent pool. It was a rain serpent, and it was oracular. And of course, we have Delphi and the Pythia, the snake woman of Delphi, prophesying in verse in an ecstatic state there next to the Castalian spring. And there are so many different forms of that. And one of the things that came up for me recently was the goddess Wadjet, who is the great serpent goddess of the Nile Delta. You know, she's the one, when you see the pharaohs with the snake on the brow, right over the third eye, right? They have this serpent of wisdom. the town that the Greeks called.
No, I want you to hold that. We're going to take a very, very short musical Taj Mahal break, but come right back with Waja. We want that. This is Caroline Casey. Our wonderful guest is Max Dashew. It's the Visionary Activist Show, and we'll be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Chanty, chanty, come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I still love that break music. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and our perfect for now and always really guest is brilliant scholar of women's magic and magic for us all, really, Max Dashew. And Max, you and her fabulous website, I cannot praise it enough. It is so artful, it is so embodied, it is so available, it is so nutrient rich, is suppressedhistories.net. Oh, it's such a wealth. And I know we want to come back to Waja, but you did say, Max, that you were giving your snake wisdom presentation next week. When and how can we avail ourselves of
it? There's going to be two showings of it. So it's on Sunday the 20th and Thursday the 24th. And if you go to the events link on the webpage, you can see it there. And it's just a visual live cast. I'm going to be showing the images. It's not just talking, but really I'm all about teaching with images. And it's so you can feel it. You know, you can see it, and it goes in, and you feel it. And so, that's going to be Snake Women. And if neither of the times there, you can request a recording link for it.
Yes.
Yeah, part of that is Wadjet. And so she's the snake goddess. She has all these sides to us. Because, you know, we think about serpents, we think about the waters, and that's a big part of it. But she also has this fiery side. So she is the Eye of Ra. You know, this is one of her forms. And she's a snake in the papyrus swamp there in the Nile Delta. But her temple is called Per Wadjet. So it's the House of Wadjet. And this is the first recorded instance I know of an oracular temple. I can't find anything out about how it went, how it worked. I don't know if any of that's written down. I think Herodotus or somebody mentions it. But you know, she really resonates with the Malawian oracles, with the Delphic oracles, or even just in more recent time, the Maroons in Suriname had a goddess called Snakey Mama. And I found a picture of this medicine woman who is next to a cauldron and is invoking Snakey Mama, the snake mother, right? So people in their perplexity looking for insight and direction and solutions go to these oracles. And then, of course, we don't have that easily to hand, you know, in an external way, in a structured way, in current civilization. All that was really so much targeted. But I think for a lot of us, the question is, how do we do that? How do we access those oracular energies and that guidance? And I think that the numinous animacy, like Robin Wall Kimmerer talks about, really entering into the ecstatic vein, into the divine channels of wisdom within ourselves and within nature, that's a pathway, whether we get there through incantation and movement or meditation or qigong or breath work or walking the land, you know, immersing ourselves in the waters. That's kind of hard to do under current conditions, but, you know, finding ways to really intentionally say, I have to go deep, because this is all something that we really need guidance. We need that serpent wisdom, what Gloria Anzaldúa calls conocimiento, knowing. a little serpent for counter knowledge. It's like not the usual channels of certainty, but really going into that place of deep, innocent curiosity, but deep feeling also into the depths of our being and say, now what? How shall I move? You know, and through that ecstatic incantation, whatever it is that you do as your spiritual practice, allowing those insights to flow in like water. Or like fire, any element, really. But, you know, we need that insight and we need that transformation, especially when you're dealing with the fear so many people are facing through the course of events, you know, whether it's the firestorms or the hurricanes or, you know, and just looking at the threat of tyranny being made structurally permanent through this this crazy election.
And that was part of I keep referencing this really one page from Dionne Fortune, but I am going to bring in the whole thing at some point. But she says part of how we were able to maintain serenity is due to our certainty about the desirable outcome. And whenever we got frightened or whatever, we would come back to, you know, fully aware of danger, fully informed, right? But would come back to the steady, this is where it's going. This is what we're collaborating with all of creation to bring about. This is how we see a wonderful life for all children. This is how we see Mar-a-Lago being used for immigrant housing. This is how we see all of these things, right? And for me, it was in second grade when Billy Adler, who was the first clearly gay person I'd ever met in our school, wonderful human, and he brought a magic eight ball into class, and I'm like, oh, how wonderful! Magic eight ball.
We'd
thank
love
you,
the eight
Billy.
Balls.
Well, yes, reply hazy, ask again. Well, that's it works very well for this election, right? And although, yes, I need a pre-plastic one to restore. But, yeah, no, the snaky goddesses. So, right, well, so inviting in what inviting in that which is larger and better than ourselves. And, I'd mentioned that Steve Bannon has his Venus at 19 Scorpio. How dare he? Because that's the sorceress degree. But in Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, it's Mercury and Juno at 19 Scorpio. So Abraham Lincoln is the antidote for Steve Bannon going out of here, you poisonous poseur, toxic mimic of what it is to be dedicated. And there was much compassion in that address. Yes. And of course we do the positive, you know, kind of feminine Pluto, because everything has all aspects, right? We must invite in the wrathful Dakinis, right? Because again, in the litany, you know, they laugh and dance as they feast on the painful negativity and conditioning. We're all being deconditioned. It's a ferocious cooking process that the unenlightened would take to be kind of like a problem. And I love that they metabolize the poison of anger into the tonic of wrath, fierce protection of all beings, of the community. And they metabolize the poison of seduction into the tonic of magnetism. Bring everything alive. Bring everything alive. That's really good.
Yeah, so. It's true. And that also brings up like the chid tradition in the Tibetan world,
yes,
where this supreme detachment renders you invulnerable to all demonic energies. So like chid practitioners would tend to plague victims and not get sick. I mean, may we get there, you know, may we reach that attainment, because there is this way in which, you know, all of us are facing this very strong challenge. This, you know, the very air we breathe is can be fearful to us with the contagion. And then, of course, the forces of denial. No, there's no problem. It's okay. Everything's all right. You know, no masks. You know, that kind of stuff where people grasp at what seems comfortable, you know. But with chid, you know, it's like you have to detach from all the aversions. And that's, you know, that's a specifically Buddhist practice, but I think that there's a larger wisdom tradition aspect to that. And, you know, that way that there's that, like, one of the memes that that comes up, and this is going back to churning the ocean and this whole thing about what is poison, what is nectar, what heals, you know, what devours. The blood of Medusa, and there's this line, one drop kills, the other heals disease. You know, so it's that duality that's in reality, that we can live it this way or we can live it that way, and, you know, how are we going to bring it about that this will be transformative? Asclepius was said to have been given some of this essence. And, of course, there's a whole story about Medusa and the demonization of the African snake woman. You know, that we don't endorse that slaughter. You know, we can bring back Medusa and the power of her blood in her own right. She doesn't have to be slain, right? But Asclepius used this blood to raise the dead, they say. And there's a whole interesting story about that, because Zeus doesn't like the fact that this healing power is among humans. He's always punishing people for becoming like the divine. There's that whole authoritarian aspect of you know, the patriarchal god. But he strikes down Asclepius with a thunderbolt, and he is catastrophized, as they say in classical literature. He is thrown up into the heavens as Ophiuchus. I just found this out. I didn't know this. So Ophiuchus is the stinger of the Scorpio constellation, and it's that darkest part of the heavens, you know, in the nakshatras of the Indian astrology system. It is the goddess Jyeshta, the old one. And so she too, like Medusa, is demonized, but the deep wisdom of the female elder resides there in the dark, you know. And so again, it's that wisdom of the deep blackness, the dark place in the Milky Way, you know, that there is something to be gained from those journeys. We just have to keep ourselves clear enough not to be seduced off into the byways of the attached mind, you know, in order to reach that deep wisdom.
Right.
And the challenge of how do we do this collectively, the hardest of all, how do we manifest those kinds of insults in insights in a collective way?
How do we metabolize insults into insights? There we go. And the art of insult. Yeah, no, the Medusa, I'd forgotten about her blood. One drop kills, how does it, one drop kills, the other
one
drop heals?
One drop kills, the other heals disease.
Right.
It's even true with medicine, you know, the medicines that are poisons, medicines that cure.
Yes. Poisonous allies, snake poison. I know it well, and my late ally Nalita Anderson, raised from birth as a kahuna in Hawaii, with her many planets in Scorpio in 12th house, and I carry with me always. She said we had to learn poison and harm in our lifelong training, not a weekend workshop. And she said, not to use poison and harm, but in the body of a person or the culture, the killing points are the same as the healing points. The difference is intention. So before us all, this is just, you know, all moments in time await our dedication. And, you know, the backstage trickster and serious divinities say to everybody listening, we know, of course, you're a good person. Of course, it's a mere formality. Just sign this imaginary contract before each one of us now that we dedicate our considerable skills to healing, not harming, including our words and all, which doesn't mean to be boring. Right? That's right. It's the intention that is crucial, that we not waver from that, because it is such a huge initiation. I mean, there is no monstrosity better constructed to elicit conniption fits, like Watchman. It's like that is, but it was interesting. I was subjecting myself to a horrific moment of watching Trump before we began, you know, and it's like, oh, he was very boring and droning, and we go, God, even the demon that had possessed him is fed up and has left, because it was just flat. I mean, you can see when the demon takes charge and his eyes kind of glow, and it's like, no, the demon left, may he not be repossessed. Just flat, flat. There we go. You know, and so we don't actually wish him harm because we are friends of his soul. We are friends of his indictment, because it's not good for anybody to get away with tyranny. So spicy, playful, not nice, which comes from nescient, ignorant. But here we are in Virgo, right? Diagnosis, a great word, diagnosis. Diagnosis and criticism in order to diagnose and heal, right? That's we want to keep the intention, like going spicy insight, yes, in order. And I think before us all, you know, as aspiring culture doctors, you know, the spell, to dissolve the spell that's been woven, in which the Dementor family virus, you know, has locked into some uninitiated part of the American psyche, we go, we want to dissolve that. And that's why I was bringing up to groups and also to you last night going, that's why I admire honey badgers and possums. And you were bringing in wolverines because they have evolved the perfect symmetry of cobra venom, which is a perfect lock to the key of mammalian breathing. That's what happens. You stop breathing with cobra venom. But the possums and honey badgers have evolved. They've shape-shifted their receptors so that the harmful thing no longer fits. And I think this is a really good thing for us to imagine, right? That the receptors of us and the American psyche are shape-shifting so that the toxic mimic no longer fits, you know, so that everyone is immune to that level. Because so many of the conspiracy nutcase things are people bamboozled by their desire to not be bamboozled. You know, and
that's the very, very, that's just mind-blowing.
Well, we do want to track everything back to its originating impulse before it got bamboozled and go, what did this want to be before it got all kidnapped into specialness? And you know, for me, one of the standards is about conspiracy everything. Because we love, I mean, there are real conspiracies that we want to know everything. We want to be fully informed. But does it lure people into specialness polarity? We are enlightened, but those are snake people. And also, how dare they use snakes in that way? Or we are the 144 special wuzza-wuzza, or the chosen one. I think chosen ones into the cauldron. No,
definitely.
It's just an outworn, just what a bad idea right now. Into the cauldron, you know, ladle out, you know, equality, throw in specialness and hunger for status, and ladle out uniqueness, you know, and because everybody who's unique encourages everybody to be unique. It's a liberating thing. It's a festival of liberation, you know, and we want everyone's unique skills. To toss back to you, you know, we'd say, you know, in initiation, we don't have Delphi. We don't have the Eleusinian mysteries. We don't have the initiations, really, although many people are bringing back and troubled youth and things. But the simple thing, which we do want to animate, it was to say to everybody and youth and veterans, you know, we need you. We need your unique contribution to build Stonehenge and Green New Deal and reverently Renaissance the whole thing. We need you. I mean, and I think that's part of where people got bamboozled. They wanted, they had a vulnerable receptivity to the virus of specialness. You know, it's like we got to toss that thing into the cauldron too. We are important, but they are not. Yeah, because that's, yeah. Anything else you want to toss into?
We need you, and also we have the faith that this can be different. I think a lot of people have kind of lost faith that, I mean, it just there's so much direness. Or witnessing all this. I really like that you brought up diagnosis, by the way, knowing through, knowing across, you know, this is as a way of actually perceiving, you know, what's going on in order to do the cure. And even conspiracy, you know, breathing together,
yeah. Sure.
Right? So that there's a sacred ground to that, even just like conjuration is another one. This word was used a lot in the Middle Ages as a bad word, but it actually means swearing together, taking an oath together. So, you know,
it seems
like a lot of this is manifesting in a toxic form. People are taking oaths of allegiance to things that they were misdirected into believing in something wrong. And, you know, they're going to pursue it with vigor, you know, or they have been, but no longer. You know, that's the core of what has to be turned, is that the vow coming from a space where they really, they want to protect from pedophilia. This is such a worthy goal. And how did they get turned into thinking that the pedophiles were the saviors from pedophilia? You know, these conspiracy theories. That's Trumpery at its core. It's like whatever he is, he accuses others of being.
Right. Well, it's Bannon. It does come from Bannon, the outrageous. Well, because the term fake news was originally applied to Trump, right? And, I mean, under Bannon's igniting of his chaos lust, they do everything. That's why it's so conniption fit inducing, you know, and it really is third grade, too. I know I am, but what are you? I know I am, but what are you?
Mm-hmm.
I know you are, but what are you? It's very recessed third grade taunting, you know, but it is conniption. And so we do want to throw all bamboozling into the cauldron and ladle out authenticity, and that each person can feel the texture of authenticity for real and truthfulness, and the real nutrient going here, meaningful work, we love you, come this way. So it's a hair-raising time, but then we come back to calm there.
Yeah.
And mutual aid and cultivating citizenship, right? So for me, the people bamboozled into the crazy mask thing, which is, no, I won't, I'm free, you know, my freedom tramples on your right to life. Just right. We go, no, the Saturn-Jupiter conjunction will happen on December 21st, on the winter solstice, King Arthur's birthday, and it will template the next 20 years. Could go many ways, but what does it want to be? It wants to be the welcoming of all outsiders with something to contribute into mutual aid community, right? And that what presides over Aquarius, because symbolic languages that have been dissed and trivialized, you know, but are where cultures embedded a great deal of their wisdom. So community, Aquarius, Saturn, boundaries, and Uranus, freedom. It's a dynamic dance. So it's always a Saturn sacred constraint for greater community freedom. Animals do this. Fish do this. They have cute little masks. No, they go off by themselves when they're ill until they recover or have gone off into the nether fish heavens. And the thing I do always use, it's like, you know, when I picked up my puppies, they'd never had a leash on, and when I put a leash on them, the light in their eyes dimmed, and I go, no, it's a constraint that leads to greater freedom. I'm going to put on a leash and we're going to go out into a big world. And they were like, oh, we're cool with that.
Yeah, you know, there's something about this, we have to renew, because, you know, the light can go out of your eyes. I mean, things happen, and it's just like, it's painful, and you're constricted by the outside world in whatever way, and so you have to constantly come back to the core, and I feel like that renewal is really crucial for us to be able to stay in that sane, peaceful samatva state. You know, it's a yoga that we have to, it's a constant renewal, and that's very serpentine.
Right. No, that's great. The snaky serpents. It's also our whole Renaissance. It's permaculture, right? Which is rivers that meander. There is a great word. Yeah, rivers that meander and are snaky. You know, metabolize poison. Now we're back to what metabolizes poison. Straight lines can carry poison and can't metabolize it. It's why the feng shui people say, make sure the path to your house is curvy, because demons are so stupid, they can only follow straight lines. So curvy lines, that's really good. Never mind that. There's something.
Reminds me of another thing that in order to ward off the demonic energy, a lot of folk traditions have this thing of you cast beans or you cast seeds or you cast something that is innumerable, and they have to stop and count each one of them before they can pursue you.
Well, that's fun. Oh, that's great. Say that again. That sounds extremely useful. You carry a handful of beans?
Well, it's not that you're carrying anything, but there's like a ceremony. So like maybe to protect the doorway or something. And it's like, you know, there are negative energies around. And so they will have you perform a ceremony of casting something many, 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 many things, innumerable things, like sesame seeds or something like that. And so they have to stop. They have to stop and count it. Why they have to stop and count it was never really explained, but there's this metaphoric thing it's like this casting of this glamour, this shimmering that becomes a protective force field. And meanwhile, you book out of there, you know.
Right. Well, that's so great. We want all these skills.
It stops their pursuit of you.
Right. Right. No. Well, that is a common thing. You throw the thing, and well, that's Eddie Izzard saying, let's remake the Star Trek phasers because they're just stun or kill, and we want many, many more. And so he has the sudden interest in botany setting. I will kill you. Oh, look at the moss. Oh, that's wonderful. and that's part of Mars retrograde. We want to redesign everyone's phaser settings to be ingenious, you know, worthy distractions or breaking the trance so that you're actually focusing on the moss really is more important than killing somebody. That's really good. And then I just want to put a little prayer, because we get to ladle things out of the cauldron, right? So in the realm of corruption, you know, if we can compost corruption, we have a near infinite renewable resource. But I would say we want bad things to be too expensive. There we go. And we're in our last some minutes, too, but is there anything that you would like to I want bad things to be too expensive. That it worked with, you know, some of the oil rigs that closed down going, we can't make any money. And private, all of that. But is there anything else? Because remember, Jupiter says, whatever dedication we all put on our cauldron altar, you know, Jupiter says, whatever bowl we put on our altar of our own dedication, Jupiter says, I will fill it. And this is a strong time now to do that. But what would you like to ladle out? We give you the last minute.
Oh, gosh, something just flashed through my mind and it went out because I was listening to you. But, yeah, I mean, it's like we have to, I think that the most important thing is not to get demoralized. You know, that's the ultimate puncture in the flow. You know, so we really have to keep ourselves whole in that way. We have to stay calm. And if we're not calm, then we go through that process of transformation that gets us there. And in the meantime, it exudes insight, you know, if we're dancing or whatever we're doing, we're running, you know. And so stay centered. We got to stay centered
right.
And find new ways to unify. I think that unification is a really big part of this. And, one of the things was that Mars, you know, on the positive side of Mars, the Hindu name for the planet Mars is Mangala, which means auspicious. And it's kind of like there's this spell in the naming because it's like, well, you know, Mars can be wounding and Mars can be harmful. But no, we're going to name it this way so that we bring out that aspect of it. Just like, you know, the Hungarians didn't really want to say the word wolf because that would be actually invoking the wolf. And so they would say animal with tail. You know, it's the renaming.
Well, we're on our way out. Oh, most adorable Max Dashew. But absolutely, everybody, check out suppressedhistories.net. It is a fantastic, kind, beautiful offering to the world. Thank you so much, Max. And I will
see
you at the Snake Women presentation next week. That's really great. And thanks always to Kirsten Thomas. I'm Caroline Casey. There's an Equinox event Monday. Find out about it at coyotenetworknews.com, and we will reconvene next week.